Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
It's time now for the fourth and final part of Colin Murphy's series on children in care, supported by the Mary Raftery Journalism Fund. Colin came into studio earlier and he outlined this week's investigation.
Mary, I'd like to look at some of the issues we've flagged along the way, such as the quality of data on children in care, the numbers of social workers and the quality of children's homes. But I thought we should start again with the voice of one of the young people I met who had been in care. This has been my main objective in this series, to get these voices on air so we can learn directly from these young people themselves. So this is Mark. And just very briefly, this is what happened after he was taken into care.
I moved into care when I was 6 years of age. We lived in Temple Street Hospital for 2 months. My brother would have been three and I would have been six. Well, they couldn't get our place back into the residential unit in Dunleary. So we stayed in the hospital for 2 months. The first thought, we thought we were sick. So we were kind of freaked out for the first week that we were there. Then after a while, everyone that was in the hospital were real nice to us, brought us out to the cinema, brought us to parks, brought us things. There were real sound in the place, but at the same time, in the back of your head, when you're in a hospital, you think you're sick. After two months, you're still kind of going, where am I? Why am I here? And me and Diane were just sitting in the room kind of going, we don't belong here. Like,
they were not sick. They were put into a hospital for 2 months. Does that still happen?
No, it certainly shouldn't. Now, that was about 15 years ago, and policy has changed significantly since then. Nowadays, children under 12 are supposed to be placed with foster families, not even in a residential institution. So that's a big improvement. But I think what Mark says there does raise the whole issue of capacity. At that time, there wasn't capacity in the residential care system. Today, capacity, as we have seen, is lacking in other parts of the system, such as special care. The outcome can be similar. Children end up not getting the care they need, and that can prove catastrophic for them in the long run. Mark did afterwards move to a residential centre, and he did very well. He's now studying to be a social worker.
To talk about the residential home, because you've said you received inspection reports on these centres, and what did you find in those?
Yeah, so Mary, we've come across reports like these before. People will have heard of them. HICWA inspects centres for children run by the HSE, but there are about 100 privately run homes, and these are inspected directly by the HSE's own inspectorate. So these reports haven't been published, and I obtained the reports for 2012 from the HSE.
That's an awful lot of centres, 100.
Yeah, they tend to be very small. They're often an ordinary house in a suburb with roughly between one and four young people living in it and staff coming and going. I got reports of 34 inspections in 2012, and to comb through these, I got the help of a small team of colleagues, Maggie Armstrong, Mark McMenamin and Sinead O'Shea.
Is it possible to briefly summarise what you found?
Yeah, well, 28 of the reports, 28 out of 34, were broadly or fully positive. Six were critical, either of the centres themselves or of the HSE.
And those criticisms came from HSE inspectors, critical of the HSE.
Yes, which I think probably demonstrates the strength of the robustness of the inspection service. Two issues came up repeatedly in their criticisms of their own service. One was aftercare, which we've been hearing about directly from young people in this series. A quote from one of the reports: the reality is that services, aftercare services, are significantly under-resourced, leading to extensive waiting lists and no viable options for some young people. This issue, the inspector said, has been consistently highlighted by inspectors in inspection reports. So again, that reinforces very clearly the kind of stuff we've been hearing anecdotally from young people themselves.
The second issue?
The second issue was social workers and adequacy of social work resources.
And have you some examples of exactly what they're talking about in that?
Yeah, so in the case of social workers, I have a few quotes here from some of the reports. In the case of one centre, which was home to two teenagers, inspectors found that one of them had been visited just once by the social worker, and the other had four social workers allocated to them in succession in just 5 months, and none had ever visited them. So there's a clear echo there of people remember sort of Sarah's story in the first... In the first of your series.
This is the fourth, yeah.
Yeah, the quick turnover of social workers and not having good contact with them. In another case, a young person had not had an allocated social worker for a period of approximately 10 weeks. And during this period of time, the young person was engaging in, quote, extremely at-risk behaviours. And in another one, inspectors were of the view that the safety issues and concerns about the most recent resident in the centre did not prompt robust responses. There was too much delay in addressing the safety and protection concerns. This was not acceptable. The standard on child protection was not met.
Can we stay with the social work issue for a minute? Because we've covered this a lot on this programme, and what you're telling us suggests there are still gaps in this service. What have you learned about the whole question of social workers? Just for example, the numbers in the system. Do we have enough?
The HSE recruited 270 new social workers in response to shortcomings identified in the Ryan report in 2009. At the same time as that recruitment, which happened over the years since, it's lost 250 social workers, just people moving on. Of those who've moved on, so that almost cancels out the extra ones they got. Of those who've moved on, the HSE told me that 114 have been replaced, and that leaves a shortfall of 136. That's roughly 10% of the social workers working in child and family services. The HSE say these are currently being recruited, but that process of losing staff and recruiting new ones is a constant process in any organisation. And it appears to be the case that rather than anticipating these losses, the HSE is effectively leaving a constant shortfall while they recruit.
Has the work level for social workers increased exponentially with the number of children coming through the system?
Yes. So the reference point for the HSE always is that the Ryan report said we needed 270 extra and we got those 270 extra. But since the Ryan report in 2009, the number of children in care has risen by 10%. And on top of that, the number of referrals to the service is up almost 60%. So there is a very significant increase in caseload. And at the same time, we have, as we've seen, a shortfall in staff caused by failing to replace those who are leaving quickly enough.
And Colin, in the course of your investigations, have you seen any evidence of what the consequences are of having this shortfall of social worker numbers?
Well, yeah, there's quite a lot of documentary evidence now in various reports on instances where there appears to be a lack of social workers or a lack of resources in that area. So, for example, HICWA have been doing inspections of local health area offices. In Carlow-Kilkenny earlier this year, they found a shortage of social workers. They found that the situation was not tenable on a long-term basis and was potentially unsafe. In the Cork North Lee local health area, they found there were delays of several months before an initial assessment was initiated. In Cavan Monaghan, they found 419 cases awaiting initial assessment. And in Dublin South City, a significant shortfall in staff.
This is something that you have discussed with the HSE.
Yes, I met Aidan Waterstone, who's the National Specialist for Children and Family Services. And he started by giving me an overview of the strengths of the service.
If you look overall at our care service, 6,004 children, 400 children in care, in the main, the vast majority of those children are getting an excellent service. That's just the simple fact of it. They are. We've had, whatever it was, 40,000 inquiries reports last year. You know, huge volume of demand on the service, but the service continues to operate. And it operates very effectively. There are issues, and issues are being identified, and HICWA inspections are very useful at identifying those issues. And the service is responding to the issues that are being identified. This is an ongoing process, but at the same time, it is a service which operates very effectively. It is a very good service, and there are plenty of indicators of that.
Hey, Mary, one of the key issues I've come up against is what seems to me like a lack of good data on children in care. So I asked Aidan about this, and I started by asking about the data on children who move between special care and youth detention.
No, we don't have those figures or we don't keep that data.
Do you think you should have those figures? Do you think the system should be keeping those figures, for example?
You know, there's always a demand to count the numbers of things and count the numbers of children in different categories and different types of care, such as the question you're asking now. Actually, probably what is more useful is to have more information about how effective the service has been. We're moving more towards outcome measurements rather than output measurements.
Wouldn't criminality or criminalisation be considered possibly an outcome?
It could be, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But there aren't stats on... how many young people in care end up in the criminal justice system, for example?
No, we don't keep that data.
Other data I was looking for originally were data around behavioural problems, mental health difficulties. What kind of data do you have on that?
Again, we don't keep data on mental health difficulties of young people in care. We provide services for young people, but there hasn't been any perceived need to publish data on how many young people in care have mental health issues.
There was data being published on how many young people coming into care had mental health difficulties or behavioural difficulties.
We're not maintaining that data now.
Would the fact that it was being maintained as a reason for coming into care and the fact that the service is so interested in outcomes not suggest that it would make sense to monitor that while children are in care?
Not necessarily, no.
And the Ryan report said there should be a record of what happens to children when they leave care in order to inform future policy and planning of services. The data on aftercare seems to be particularly poor.
Well, every child approaching the end of their care has an aftercare plan developed. So that's where we have that information available to us.
It doesn't appear to be aggregated.
We certainly do aggregate quite an amount of data on aftercare.
Do you know, for example, how many young people who were formerly in care are homeless?
Once they leave our care, if we're providing a service, we will have information about them. If they're not availing of our services, we won't necessarily know where they are or what's happening to them.
But within, for example, the numbers in aftercare, which is it about 1,200 in aftercare? So they're receiving a service, so you have a record of them. Of those numbers, do you know how many are availing of homeless services, for example, how many are unemployed, how many potentially in prison?
No, we don't keep that data because we wouldn't necessarily be in touch with those people or we wouldn't know where they are.
But if these are the people who are in aftercare?
Well, if they're availing of aftercare services, they're unlikely to be in prison, for example. You know, they're going to be using one of our services.
But they could be in the homeless services?
They could be in a homeless service, yeah.
Okay, but there's no number, there's no...
We don't keep that data, no.
And I asked Aidan Waterstone about social work staffing levels, and I put it to him that based on the figures and the evidence I had seen, there seemed to be clearly a shortage and possibly a serious shortage of social workers.
The number we are, the budget we are allocated is a matter for the Dáil. The Dáil votes a budget, and it's the responsibility of Children and Family Services and the HSE to make the absolute best use of the budget and the resource that's allocated to us.
But that doesn't change whether or not there's a shortage. Do you think there is a shortage of social workers?
Well, as I say, our responsibility is to use the resource we have to best effect and to meet needs in the most effective way and efficient way with the resource that we have.
The figures I was given suggest that there's a shortfall of 136 at the moment in relation to existing positions.
You know, every month there's a recruitment in place. There are people on their way into jobs. The process of recruitment takes a period
but
of time.
But that suggests that constantly there's a shortage. It's different people.
Constantly
a lack of this number of people.
Yeah, people are leaving and posts are being replaced. That is an ongoing... That's what happens in any organisation. Hmm. People leave and people are replaced and there's a process for doing that. Now, if you look at HICWA inspection reports, which is one useful way to get some measure of how effective services have been... Again, particularly inspections of care services, you will see that those inspections are quite good and the outcomes are quite good and improving. So I think that's a useful indicator of how effective the response is by Children and Family Services.
An issue that's consistently arising is not in terms of management or processes or, practices, it's in terms of a lack of social workers. Dublin South City, significant shortfall in staff had a detrimental impact on the office's ability to ensure all cases were allocated, etc.
And again, it's an issue for our service to address. It's a way it's for us to see how we can use the resources available to us most efficiently to address those issues. And that's what we're doing.
Aidan Waterstone there. So, Colin, after a four-part investigation, you spoke to those who had been in care, you spoke to the caregivers. What have you learned over the course of the series?
Yeah, so Mary, as we've heard there from Aidan Waterstone and the HSE and others, those in the system are making bold claims for the progress they're making with the quality of care they give children, and the further progress that's envisaged. And I believe them. Like, there are a lot of improvements happening, but there's a historical context that I think we have to be aware of. We have a long history in this country of not counting these children, of not legislating for them, and of not resourcing the services that we provide to them. So when I look at a system that today is improving, definitely, and see that the information it collates on children in care is paltry, that legislative provision is incomplete, as we heard earlier in the series, and that there are waiting lists for emergency services such as special care, I can't help but hear echoes of some of the thematic issues that ran through the Ryan report. I think resources is key. We've historically failed to invest in these children as a society, and there's clearly still gaps there. I asked the solicitor, Catherine Ghent, about this. She mentions detention, but we were discussing generally in the context of children at the crisis end of the system. So this is what she had to say.
And I think that if you go through the history of detention in this country of children from the circumstances documented in the Ryan report, right through to the days when we routinely detained children in St Patrick's Institution in Dublin and Oberstown who'd committed no criminal offences, for their own safety. I think if you go through that, you have to come to the conclusion that I think they were careless in relation to the rights of some children as opposed to others. And again, we have to ask ourselves, why is that? Who are those children? And why do we consistently allow that to happen? Why do we perhaps consistently allow a child born in difficult socioeconomic circumstances? Why do we not apply the same rigour of analysis and therapeutic input to that child as opposed to a child of a different, perhaps socioeconomic background?
Mary, there's some extraordinary young people out there, and there are really superb people working with them both within and without the system. But I mean, really, the overriding thing that I'm left with is it has been a privilege to meet these young people, and I hope we'll be hearing from them again in the future. I should say a thank you to the two organisations in particular that helped me, EPIC, which advocates on behalf of young people who were in care, and the After Residential Care Trust, and I know both organisations will be grateful for any support. And of course, this was all supported, made possible by the Mary Raftery Journalism Fund.
And that was Colin Murphy there, ending his four-part investigation for Drive Time. We'll take our final break.